Penguin Random House Audio presents Feeling and Knowing, Making Minds Conscious by Antonio Damasio. Read for you by Julian Morris. For Hannah. Before we begin. The book you're about to hear has some curious origins. It owes a lot to a privilege I have long enjoyed and a frustration I have often felt. The privilege consists in having had the luxury of space when I needed to explain complicated scientific ideas using the large number of pages of a standard non-fiction book. The frustration came from talking to many of my readers over the years and learning that some ideas that I wrote about with enthusiasm, and that I had been keenest to have readers discover and enjoy, were lost in the middle of long discussions and hardly noticed, let alone enjoyed. My private response, on such occasions, has been a firm but always postponed decision to write only about the ideas I most care for and leave behind the connective tissue and the scaffolding meant to frame them. In brief, do what good poets and sculptors do so well. Chip away at the non-essential and then chip some more. Practice the art of haiku. When Dan Frank, my editor at Pantheon, told me that I should write a focused and very brief book on consciousness, he could not have anticipated a more receptive and enthusiastic author. The audiobook you're listening to is not exactly what he ordered, because it is not only about consciousness, but it comes close. What I could not have anticipated is that the effort of reconsidering and paring down so much material would help me confront facts that I'd overlooked and develop new insights about not just consciousness, but related processes. The road to discovery is twisted, to say the least. It is not possible to make sense of what consciousness is and of how it developed without first addressing a number of important questions in the universe of biology, psychology, and neuroscience. The first of those questions concerns intelligences and minds. We know that the most numerous living organisms on Earth are unicellular, such as bacteria. Are they intelligent? Indeed they are, remarkably so. Do they have minds? No, they do not, I believe, and neither do they have consciousness. They are autonomous creatures. They clearly have a form of cognition relative to their environment, and yet, instead of depending on minds and consciousness, they rely on non-explicit competences based on molecular and submolecular processes that govern their lives efficiently according to the dictates of homeostasis. And what about humans? Do we have minds and only minds? The simple answer is no. We certainly have minds populated by patterned sensory representations called images, and we also have the non-explicit competences that serve simpler organisms so well. We are governed by two types of intelligence, relying on two kinds of cognition. The first is the one humans have long studied and cherished. It is based on reasoning and creativity, and depends on the manipulation of explicit patterns of information, known as images. The second type is the non-explicit competence found in bacteria, the one variety of intelligence on which most lives on Earth have depended and continue to depend. It remains hidden to mental inspection. The second question we need to address deals with the ability to feel. How are we able to feel pleasure and pain, well-being and sickness, happiness and sadness? The traditional answer is well known. The brain allows us to feel, and all we need is to investigate the specific mechanisms behind specific feelings. My aim, however, is not to elucidate the chemical or neural correlates of one particular feeling or another, an important issue that neurobiology has been attempting to address with some success. My aim is different. I wish to know about the functional mechanisms that allow us to experience in mind a process that clearly takes place in the physical realm of the body. That intriguing pirouette from physical body to mental experience is conventionally attributed to the good offices of the brain, specifically to the activity of physical and chemical devices called neurons. Although it is apparent that the nervous system is required to accomplish that remarkable transition, there is no evidence that it does so alone. Moreover, the intriguing pirouette that allows the physical body to harbor mental experiences is regarded by many as impossible to explain. In an attempt to answer the critical question, I focus on two observations. One of them relates to the unique anatomical and functional features of the interoceptive nervous system, the system responsible for signaling from the body to the brain. These features are radically different from those that can be found in other sensory channels, and, although some of them have previously been documented, their significance has been overlooked. And yet, they help explain the peculiar melding of body signals and neural signals that decisively contributes to experiencing the flesh. Another pertinent observation concerns the equally unique relationship between the body and the nervous system, specifically the fact that the former entirely contains the latter within its borders. The nervous system, including its natural core, the brain, is located in its entirety within the territory of the body proper, and is fully conversant with it. As a consequence, body and nervous system can interact directly and abundantly. Nothing comparable holds for the relation between the world external to our organisms and our nervous systems. An astonishing consequence of this peculiar arrangement is that feelings are not conventional perceptions of the body, but rather hybrids, at home in both body and brain. This hybrid condition may help explain why there is a profound distinction but no opposition between feeling and reason, why we are feeling creatures that think and thinking creatures that feel. We go through life feeling or reasoning or both, as required by the circumstances. Human nature benefits from an abundance of explicit and non-explicit types of intelligence, and from the use of feeling and reason, each alone or in combination. Plenty of intellectual power, obviously, though not nearly enough, for us to behave decently to our fellow humans, not to mention other living creatures. Armed with important new facts, we are finally prepared to address consciousness directly. How does the brain provide us with mental experiences that we unequivocally relate to our beings, to ourselves? The possible answers, as we shall see, become disarmingly transparent. 2. Before we proceed, I need to say a few words about how I approach the investigation of mental phenomena. To be sure, the approach begins with the mental phenomena themselves, when singular individuals engage in introspection and report on their observations. Introspection has its limits, but it has no rival, let alone a substitute. It provides the only direct window into the phenomena we wish to understand, and it memorably served the scientific and artistic genius of William James, Sigmund Freud, Marcel Proust, and Virginia Woolf. More than one century later, we can claim some advances, but their achievement remains extraordinary. The results of introspection can now be connected and enriched by results obtained with other methods that also concern mental phenomena, but investigate them obliquely by focusing on their A. behavioral manifestations and B. biological, neurophysiological, physicochemical, and social correlates. In recent decades, several technical advances have revolutionized these methods and given them considerable power. The text you're about to hear relies on results culled from integrating such formal scientific efforts with the results of introspection. There is little merit in complaining about the flaws of self-observation and about its obvious limits, or, for that matter, in complaining about the indirect nature of the sciences that concern mental phenomena. There is no other way of proceeding, and the multifaceted techniques that have become state-of-the-art go a long way toward minimizing the difficulties. One last word of caution. The facts generated by this multi-pronged approach require interpretation. They suggest ideas and theories meant to explain facts in the best possible way. Some ideas and theories.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?